We grow June strawberries, summer raspberries, blueberries, fall raspberries, and day-neutral strawberries.
Today's episode comes to you from Charlotte, Vermont, where we visit with Adam Hausman and Jessica Sanford of Adam's Berry Farm. Our visit today will be split into two episodes. The first one is a walking tour of his blueberry fields, the strawberry patches, and raspberry plantings. We step inside the high tunnels and look at the fruit in there, as well as the barn, which houses a kitchen, farm stand, and packing equipment. This visit had a bit of snow along the tree line, so if you hear a crunch while we're walking, that's why. The next episode will highlight how they got started farming and built their farm up over the last 20 years or so, and we get into the why they chose the farming practices that they did. I'm your host, Andy Chamberlain, and I take you behind the scenes with growers who share their strategy for achieving the triple bottom line of sustainability. These interviews unravel how they're building their businesses to balance success across people, profits, and our planet. Before we get started, I'd like to share a review left on Apple Podcasts. It states, "Glad to have stumbled on this podcast. Would love to have a chance to talk with and tour with the host someday at our farm. We're transitioning from a 400-acre wholesale produce farm to direct sales only at our farm store. Many things are proving to be very challenging, but this podcast is very useful. Thanks for all the great ideas and ways to improve." Thanks, Quebeca Farms, for the comment. If this show has impacted you, I'd love to hear it via email or publicly as a review in the podcast app. The Farmer's Share is supported by the Vermont Vegetable and Berry Growers Association and the Ag Engineering Program of the University of Vermont Extension. If you enjoy this show and want to help support its programming, you can make a one-time or reoccurring donation on our website by visiting thefarmersshare.com/support.
Adam Hausman.
Jessica Sanford.
From Adam's Berry Farm. We're located in Charlotte, Vermont, in southern Chittenden County, just south of Burlington. And we have diverse markets from wholesale to pick your own to farmers market to frozen to value added. Production wise, we are sitting on 57 acres of conserved land through Vermont Land Trust with about 35 under production.
Let's see. I guess we'll start. Yeah, we'll start outside, and then if we can always poke in the barn on the way back.
Yeah.
Kind of show you. Well, obviously, it's, you know, February, and things are stashed away and stuffed and all of that. But yeah, I guess a little background. This was I first started walking this land in 2010, I guess, after, you know, one of the many floods down at the Intervale. It was kind of, it was fall of 2010, and I'd been paddling through raspberries again, and I was kind of like, what am I doing? I need to get out of here. And had reached out to a landowner that has a lot of land in the area, basically, and you know, drove around with him one day, and he brought me to all these different properties. And then from there, kind of, you know, was like, okay, this could maybe work. And so started walking this land that winter, and, you know, I would come out and ski and, you know, just try to get to, try to just, and the luxury of getting to know the land over a long period.
That's an awesome opportunity.
Yeah, it is. And then 2011, we kind of engaged with the Vermont Land Trust and the Farmland Access Program. And 2011, leased the land to start cover cropping it. And we hadn't purchased it at that point, but everything was going in that direction, and I was willing to take the risk. And we didn't cover crop all of it, but we did a good chunk. And cover cropped it that summer and of 2011, and then Irene happened that year, and that was, it was kind of like a good affirmation of like, okay, I'm going the right direction, you know, as far as getting, you know, to higher ground. So it was, it's very much a reactionary property. It's up high, it's like drains, it flows.
You know, that it was a key factor.
It was, yeah, I'm never going to flood here. Yes, exactly.
If we flood here, we're done.
Yeah. If we flood here, there's greater issues, is what I always say. But But the whole process of working with the land trust and conservation and landowners, it takes time. And so it was almost from start to end, it was about a 2-year process, really, to get there. And so we didn't close until the end of 2012.
In 2013, we were here and at the Intervale, doing two properties.
Split, which is not recommended at all. Most of everything, we dug a huge chunk of blueberries out. We'd lost in Hurricane Irene, we'd lost all of our raspberries and all of our strawberries. And so that was easy. We didn't have to think about them in some ways. Yeah, I was like, okay. But blueberries, we still had a healthy chunk. We had lost kind of a northern swale that we had on our property at the Intervale that washed out a bunch. But from there, we actually dug and relocated our farm here, more or less. So. So that was 2013. So now we're, we're, I guess, 11 years as of it's now. So
I feel like just in the past 2 years, we've started to feel settled and like, okay, things are in place. Like we know what we're doing. We know the land.
Yeah, it's home. It's
home.
Better be the forever farm. As I said, I wouldn't have, if I had known what I was getting into moving a farm, I wouldn't have done it.
you kind of had to, though.
There wasn't a choice. So, let's walk around.
Fact, people off, I've heard several times, you don't feel like the flywheel spinning till like year 7.
Yeah.
7 or 10. It's like it takes that long to
I remember.
Turn in a profit and like have your systems in, your infrastructure built. And
I think we didn't realize, you realize, but being at the Intervale, how much was infrastructure-wise was taken care of for you. And there's a land manager, like things like that. You didn't have to think about a road. You didn't have to think about pumps,
if the walk-in
irrigation
cooler
system.
Broke, you didn't have to deal with it.
Yeah, so it was... the relationship was very clear, and also it freed up a lot of time to focus on your business and kind of the growth of your business and your plants and all of that, where, now after, having moved and, reestablished here, I'm not sure I would have made it as a young grower if I wasn't down at the Intervale. Mm-hmm. As far as especially with the investment in perennials and the time frame that it takes to reestablish the perennials, it truly gave me kind of a grace period to get myself established to have the plantings come into production. Yeah. So, this side of the field, kind of this eastern side here, is basically the plants that we moved here. We moved, just shy of, 5,000 plants.
Whoa.
So it was something.
We were very ambitious. We're like, we're gonna just dig out the plants and then we'll dig the holes.
Just hand digging?
Just hand dig. But that's not what happened.
No, did not happen at all.
Slowly realized after like 3 plants, whoa, we're gonna need some help.
It's young plants that we dug by hand.
And when we moved here and we're starting to put them in, we had farmers come and be like, whoa, you guys, one, you are crazy, and two, you need help. So someone came and volunteered their time to dig holes with their backhoe, and then someone brought over people to help plant them all,
that's
a crew.
Sort of one scoop of the backhoe.
He just every night would come and be like, okay, what do you think you're going to get done tomorrow, and work down a, he basically just kind of inched his way down the rows here, scoop, very quick. And it was, that spring was incredibly dry and everyone was freaking out about it. And it was actually great. It was, started off very dry and it was great for us as far as being able to move around on the ground and not muck and rut everything up. And so, and then the, the week that we finished, I was stressing because we didn't have irrigation set up and it was so dry. And then it started pouring, and it was one of those like periods where it poured for like, you know, a month straight.
Yeah.
And
everyone
else
familiar.
Yeah, it was, you know, very much like this summer, and everyone else was cursing, and I was like, yes.
You watered everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. It made it so we lost, maybe 10 plants in the whole move. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing really.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
In the big picture. So
this is also the section that we keep for a pick your own customer. So we try to contain them on this side of the farm and in these varieties, opening different varieties at different times. One, when they're ready. But the pick your own, the farm stands over there so they can just flow out over there. And then we rope off the rest of the blueberries.
We've used chicken. You know, like a fencing. Want to electrify it some days. We find you really, it allows us to be like, okay, this section's open. You know, it's like, you work through early, mid, late, and to kind of open up blocks too and be like, okay, we're going to get these 5 rows picked for, 3 days and then close them off and kind of work through the field that way. And so it allows us to, funnel and direct people pretty well.
For like their safety and keeping them all kind of contained in one area, or for the plants, or like what's your reason?
Because
to help clear out the harvest.
Okay.
So if we contain them to a certain area, they're sort of in some sense working for us and, doing a thorough harvest before we open the next section. And when we open sections, we always want there to be like a huge flush of fruit. So if people are just like bopping around, it's like, we just are trying to curate their experience
as well. So
we'll
get it basically picked, down, and then let it ripen, close it down, let it ripen again, and then open it up again. And then, some of it is just to contain people, because, if it doesn't matter with pick your own, if you tell people, go follow the signs all the way to the field, they're going to go the exact opposite direction. And, you find people picking all over the farm is the reality of it, and, underbird knitting, and, you name it.
Where else in the world do you climb over fences to get where you need to go? But
right.
We don't have too much of that, but it's always comical when you find that.
So up here we have the blueberries, and then we do pick your own flowers and sunflowers up here, so try to keep all of the pick your own area more or less here. It's not fully the case. I mean, we have some raspberries here that we open up for pick your own, and then we have another section over here, and then a smaller section that's shrinking, I guess, right now, because we just got rid of a couple rows this fall that were getting tired over there. But we're trying to, right now, get it down to kind of 2 sections. And same philosophy of being able to, flip-flop, get an area picked out, let it, ripen again, open up the other, and so every, couple days. Yeah, people are, it's like, it's recreation for people. It's not, pick-your-own has changed. It's not the same as it used to be.
Yeah.
And so it's a day out, walking around, talking with your friends or family, picking
a few pints.
Yeah, a couple pints. You're not loading up. People aren't loading up the freezer.
Yeah.
And but
having that's changed. Mm. Like in our, just since being here, we used to have a lot of people that came out and picked huge containers for their freezer, and we don't see that as much anymore.
Yeah. But having said that, you see people often multiple times now over the season, where it is like, oh, it's nice to come out and it's relaxing to pick berries and it's something to do. And so I don't know if it all adds up or, as far as the balance of how much people are picking, but it's, it's certainly, it's, there's still the families that come out and are like, okay, we need 120 pounds to get through winter, it's X amount of pounds a week, and they are the goal people that are driven, but that it's rare now, so it's what it is.
right.
But what it's meant for us is there's less, I guess, emphasis that's been put on pick your own for us. Because it's more regular, I would say.
The income stream is more regular.
The reliability of people coming out on, be it to pick large quantities or even just, you know, just weather. And you know, there's a lot of variables with pick your own. So
this year is too smoky, then it was too hot, and then it was too rainy. So that just all impacts traffic. So having the labor to, you know, pick that harvest up if we're not having the pick your own customers.
But yeah, we have most of our tunnels over here, ponds for irrigation down low, blueberries. This is more kind of a mix of pick your own raspberries and freezer raspberries.
All of our land is tiled, so the ponds catch all the water that's draining through the tiles, and it flows into the pond, and then we irrigate from those.
It gets intercepted.
Yeah.
And brought back.
Did you put that in, or was that?
We did.
Yeah, we did the whole farm before we moved here, knowing that it's your one chance to work on drainage before getting all the plants in the ground, because once they're there, they're there.
Yeah.
So.
And with, you know, with climate change and the way things were going, we felt like it was needed, and shifting from, you know, very sandy, extremely well-drained soils to we have more of like a stony loam for most of this. But then as it, you know, we get down, it gets heavier and into, you know, the classic Virgin's clay. And so.
Just to aid in that.
Yeah. Needing to be able to get on fields sooner and have them dry out in the spring, and and just health of perennial plants too. You know, we don't have that same luxury of giving up on plantings if it's like, oh, it's too wet, it's like disease. We still limp stuff along and try to bring it back, and so anything you can do to help out. This field here, this is one big block here of a variety called Draper. And it's kind of one of the early releases from Michigan State. It's been doing a ton of breeding on blueberries. And it's a variety that, like, we initially put in that we keep on expanding, trying to build up our frozen market. And then as we're doing that, kind of our fresh market keeps on growing. And so we keep on eating into what we plant. And so we're not getting enough into the freezer, it seems like. But this was a variety that we put in because it has a pretty high Brix content, and so as a frozen berry, like, the sweetness still really comes through well. It has decent size, it can hang for a really long time on the bush as well, which is nice as far as like harvest time. And then it has these like super concentrated harvest periods, so we go through a lot of the older varieties kind of trickle on, and so you like maybe have fruit for weeks at a time off of one variety, but it's a little bit here, a little bit there.
Yeah.
Whereas this is just like, you come out here and it's blue.
Ready now.
It's blue, and so you can just clear it off and get a ridiculous amount of fruit in a, you know, in kind of a harvest period, and then you let it ripen. And you know, this one we often
I think
get
we did
two,
three picks this year.
What's that?
Three picks.
Yeah,
two big picks.
Too big, and then
sort
like the cleanup
of a smaller pick,
basically at the end. But this was the first kind of newer variety that had that focus of like the concentrated ripening, and also like a firmer berry, which is, you know, I have mixed feelings on it all, but its shelf life is incredible on them. Customers like them too. I mean, it's odd, like, what I wouldn't think that's what people want, but when you hear feedback like, oh, we really like, you know, the, like, we don't want like the softer fruit, we like the firmer fruit, and you know, and
it crunches.
You know, we want, yeah,
it's got
we
a
want
crunch.
Yeah, it has a nice crunch. Yeah, and you're like,
more
huh.
Crunch than a pop.
Yeah, yeah, you're like, crunch in a blueberry, interesting. Yeah. But that's
as long
that's
as the flavor's there,
it's,
I guess.
Yeah, it's desirable.
The flavor
yeah.
on this one's good. This
yeah.
is a
if you
I
like these
variety.
Hanging, they get nice, really nice flavor. First pick, I think, is like it's still developing. By second pick, a flavor's on these, and then like we've been eating them frozen recently. That's what we have in the house right now, and they're great. But yeah, so we've kind of, this was the start of shifting away from some of the older varieties that came out and like, you know, that everybody has that came out in like the 60s and into kind of this new breeding that's starting to happen, and a lot of people are starting to replace their fields with these, you know, varieties. So
yeah, these ones are seven. These bush are 7 years old.
Yeah, this was planted when Wilder was born. Jessica was out here picking rocks, and then we went to the hospital that night.
Yeah.
And then there's a break, and then we call it Cena's Field. Our daughter was, we planted it right before she was born. So we kind of...
staying active.
Yeah.
Yes, Jess was extremely active to the end.
So has this landscape fabric been down 7 years?
That was down 7 years ago. So, and we find that you can get quite a while far as, down at the Interville. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we had it there, and so that was 12 years, and we hadn't replaced it. There's places where you're patching it up and, you know, restapling, and there's places where you've sucked up some in the mower and all that. At some point, yes, we'll replace. There's, you know, irrigation lines underneath here, so we can feed them that way and
water
them.
Orchard tubing, yeah. So it's thicker, and then it has the emitter every 4 feet. So we do about 3 acres of June-bearing strawberries and an acre and a half of day neutrals, I think we're up to.
2 acres of day, 2 point, thinking in miles here, in row feet, it was like 2.4 miles of day neutrals, and it was like 3.5 miles of Junes.
That's an interesting way to think about it. When you're buying the plastic and the drip tape, that's what you start thinking about.
You start to think about it, yeah.
And then all our day neutrals we have under little low tunnels.
Yeah, or the majority of them are under low tunnels.
I think we're trying to steer that way, or all of them are under low tunnels, because it makes such a difference in terms of production numbers, poundage coming off the field.
We had kind of a split field for a long time. It wasn't fully split, but it was probably 2/3 undercover under low tunnels, and then a third out. And the fruit quality is completely different. So what was out, we were picking to freeze mainly, and it took a lot more sorting. I mean, some of it would go out to the fresh market, but a lot just went into the freezer. But then some years it was great, and it wasn't that far off from the low tunnels. And then other years, when it's a wet year, a cooler year, whatever it might be, you see significant production differences. So we're, I feel like every year we add a little, or every couple of years we seem to make an investment in more low tunnels and kind of slowly expand that. And I think after this year, whatever we have, it's really based more off of our rotation, but I think that will get us to the point where we're trying to reduce the amount of day neutrals that are in the field and just really get down to a number that's
the ones that aren't covered.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So they're all, so not under low tunnels. Mm. So I want to get all of our production under low tunnels. So that's just, it's like guaranteed at that point.
Is there a reason not to put them under low tunnels? Do they come at a slightly different time?
They come earlier. They're gone, which is nice, other than the collision of harvest at times can be challenging, where they, you plant them annually. So we try to get them in as early as we can. For us, that's usually, first week in May, we get them in. And then you start to get a trickle of fruit. You pinch flowers for a period, for about 4 to 6 weeks. And then we start to see our first trickle, it's usually late July, and then August, they start to kick on. But what happens is there's a period where it's like you're still in thick of blueberries. You have early fall raspberries coming on. And
like
there's
the
two collision periods where it's like labor-wise, harvest-wise, it's a challenge.
Yeah. It always works out, but there's the moment in the house where we're like, how are we going to are we going to navigate this?
Yeah,
whenever
we start, actually, I always say I'll see you in November. Yeah. we have a collision late June, and then we have that August collision, and then we kind of work through those week 10-day periods, and then it kind of settles down. And it doesn't settle down, but it's like a known chaos.
For the day neutrals, are those bare root in plastic?
Bare root
and
plastic.
Day neutrals are plugs, right?
Day neutrals are not plugs. Junes are mainly plugs now. Dangerous tools are bare root and plastic, yes. And then we put the low tunnels on. We try to get it on early. I mean, it's like the newer, you know, plastic. It's filtering UV light, and it's you can kind of, you know, a lot of times where you like leave like the west side down for a period, and it kind of keeps them keeps it a little bit cooler, keeps the wind, you know, so they grow. They just, the fruit that's under the low tunnels comes on earlier, and it's the plants and the fruits beautiful, you know, that comes off of it. Again, it's like varieties, you know, it's all these like what I would have probably before we grew them considered to be really awful varieties that were like
they crunch.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's nothing like a June strawberry in that, like, you know, the juice, you know, yeah, like melting in your
customers
mouth.
Like that.
But it's like it's the berries, fall berries, like butter. The texture of the berries you get in the winter, but so you know that, like, you know, the Driscolls and yeah, whatnot, but the difference is that these ones are picked ripe, and so so they actually have flavor, so you know, and so
we, the texture is familiar, but the flavor,
yeah, the flavor,
and the shelf life's incredible on them, all of that, you know, it's like they were bred to be shipped around and all of that. For me, the June strawberries are it as far as flavor and texture and like mouthfeel and all that. But customers, it's now about 50-50, I would say. You know, like some people are like, oh, we really like the
fall ones are way
more
better than the June ones.
I never thought that
just
would
to
happen.
Have that burst of sweet in September, you can't beat it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and we pick until you know, beginning of November with them. So, so it really stretches it out. And so I think the, you know, versus the Junes, it's like a 3-week hurrah, right. You know, of like, go, go, go. And then, yeah, and it really, so it's, you know, becomes
it's a
more familiar.
Harvest for the crew too, where it's like, you know, June strawberries are like you're in there every day, like 4 to 6 hours, where, you know, day neutrals are just like a little, they like trickle.
It's not an
everyday
harvest.
It's not an everyday harvest. It's,
you know,
like every
2 to 3
days
times a week we harvest them, so
it just seems more manageable for crew, seems to like that better.
yeah they love this. Yeah,
I don't know if they love strawberries in general.
But there's less like nuance with like the Junes we're going through, and we are, you know, as we're harvesting, you know, it's like direct to market, like, you know, A berries, B berries, you know, that are maybe like, you know, seconds that are either cosmetically not perfect or, you know, bruised on one side that maybe get frozen or turned into value added products. And then there's, you know, what we call like the chicken berries that are just like, you know, they're, the chickens will eat them, yeah, but nobody else will.
I feel like by the time we get people trained on June strawberries, strawberry season's over. Like, people are like, oh, I finally got them. Like, well, that's the end.
Come back next year.
Please come back next year.
Yeah. I used to say if you could get through June strawberry season, as far as like harvest crew, the rest of the season's easy, you know, and that you're, you know, where else do you get paid to crawl around as an adult on your, you know, on your hands and knees and gather things, and the hunting and gathering. So our property, kind of, we have like a weird, most of our properties over here, you know, we have 57 acres, and so, you know, 50 plus acres are kind of in this vicinity that we see from up here. And then we have like a flagpole through the woods here. The woods are neighbor's woods. And then it opens up to a different field over here that we, you know, we kind of, I guess, negotiated in when we, you know, we purchased the land that I was trying to get. There's a, you know, a nice swath of prime soils that is really, you know, in Champlain Valley, like the ridges are like the good soils, basically. Yeah. It like gives us a different road point access. There's an access off of Spear Street here. Mm-hmm. And so we initially, you know, you have all these visions of what you're going to do with your property, or you're just trying to build it in, but we're like, oh, it could be nice to, like, if you ever wanted like a separate venture or some sort of something else on the property, you could have an access point there as well.
Access is key.
Yeah, access is key, and it's proven, you know, it's just helpful as far as like getting materials over here and, you know, getting sawdust or whatever, you know, whatever it might be. If we need, you know, there's a way. It's not getting an 18-wheeler through this narrow woods path here. So this was our COVID project, I call it, kind of, where it was like our 2020, not going many places, hunkered down project. We were awarded a supply chain grant, a working lands grant, and with that we ended up doing an expansion of blueberries, and then also investing in like packing equipment and a bunch of other efficiencies to kind of take us to that next scale level and kind of bring us into the future a little bit. And here there's, let's see, there's I think 6,643 plants here, if you want to be exact. But they're all but they're all
the newer
this
varieties.
Is like this feels like the future to me right now. I mean, this was like this. They're all new varieties. Last year was our first real good harvest, like where it started to come on. Where you're like, okay, this is what it's going to be like. And you know, plants are still, you know, they're decent for, you know, 3 years old or whatever. But but they're all designed that they're kind of the same, you know, concentrated ripening periods I was talking about. Yep. Good size, you know, all of really nice size, all kind of firmer, you know, for its shelf life. And then all the varieties also can be mechanically harvested, which we're trying to just, as we're investing in new varieties, thinking about that, really thinking about labor more than anything. Yep. And trying to build some sort of security for us in the future if labor is a real challenge, or you know, wet years, or you know, whatever it might be.
Climate change, in general. Whether it's too hot or too wet, we are glad to have the ability to mechanically harvest if we need to.
Yeah, so it's really.
Well, and you're building up the frozen markets, yeah. And
yes,
stuff too.
Exactly.
So it's less critical.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, some of it, the whole frozen was, you know, building it up to be year-round so that we could also employ people year-round and, you know, income stream and all of those, like, not that, like, oh, shit, like, we're running out of money and it's, you know, like, strawberry season hasn't started yet. Like, you know, it's like it allows you to have some cushion going in, you know, every year. But yeah, I mean, some of it is, you know, just, like, presence in the marketplace through the year and trying to offset, you know, some of the, you know, the fruit that's coming in, you know, that's not necessarily local and organic, so it gives people a local and organic option year round, and that was a big part of the goal. But then, yeah, just being able to, as this comes into maturity, hire people that are more in kind of the packing side of things and keep employees around more of the year. That's kind of the goal. It's one of the bigger.
Easier to keep employees if you can have consistent work.
Yeah.
I mean, tend to keep employees maybe 2 years, and then just because we really only employ people June to end of August. There's a few that we keep on a little later and start earlier.
Yeah, there's
so,
waves.
People move on.
But the majority, yeah, we have like a crew from May to, you know, middle of November. That's like a core crew, and then we have all like the summer harvest crew, extra hands, you know, that are, you know, the college students and everything that are here, you know, June, July, August. They all say where they're going to work till the, you know, their last day of school, and then you know, everybody wants 2 weeks of vacation before, so it's like I factor in 10th to 15th around of August.
Great,
again, and, you know, yeah, once we get into classes, I'll be back, and nobody ever shows. So, like, even with our production and growth, I would say a lot of it has been concentrated on summer as well, and when there's an available extra labor pool versus spring and fall when people are either back at school or whatever it might be. So at least, you know, you at least always have like the college kids and things like that around.
Yeah, that's key too.
Yeah.
So I would say we've backed off a little bit on like our fall production and, you know, spring work. And it's really trying to just meet people where they are a little bit. That's how it feels.
Yeah.
Or meet the labor force where, you know, and that obviously that might change in the future. And like, you know, I've seen farming coming in and out of, you know, kind of like vogueness over time, where it's when I first started, it was, you had an incredible applicant pool, you know, and you could really pick people that had experience. And then it got to the point, I think, when it was like, great, they're applying, like, you're hired, you know. And then, you know, and then it's like, it's kind of come back now where there's people have experience, but then, you know, it's just, it's the shift of how people want to work right now, and flex, you know, a lot of more part-timers and things like that. So it's, you know, you're trying to run a business and run a farm, and you're trying to build that in as much as you can, which is not always easy. But yeah, so this field has, just circling back, I guess, has 5 different varieties in it. So kind of, you know, blocks from down low towards the road over here is early, and then kind of a, you know, mid-ish, you know, a good concentration of mid, and then mid-late, and then over here these cargoes here, this variety's called Cargo, is a later season variety. And I kind of envision that most of our, I guess most of our wholesale market will shift this direction and be coming out of this field. And, you know, the other field is truly going to become pick your own and kind of freezer cleanup fields, you know. But yeah, you can kind of see, I mean, you get obviously this time of year, just the red glow of the blueberries looking out. And we did some experimenting just because of the amount of pruning that we have out here. We did some kind of late fall pruning here, you know, starting to shape these plants. I mean, these are what, like probably, you know, they're 3.5-4 feet, I would say, probably now, getting to that point. I guess this is the shift from Cargo to Valor here is the next variety. But trying to shape a little bit for more of just like the upright growth, where we're taking out a lot of like the low buds down here, and then trying to also keep the crowns a little bit more narrow. And with a lot of the new varieties, they're bred for this like narrow crown as well, and that's related to
the harvester
really. It has like these catch pans that flip around, and so the narrow crown just means there's less fruit loss potentially here. So but yeah, this field is like this was exciting this year, this field coming on, and just the quality of the fruit and the flavor on the fruit. It was the first real year where I was like got a better sense of like a familiarity of the flavors too. And yeah, it was.
Are these 5 new varieties, or some of what you've been growing?
3 new ones, and then we put some more of the Draper, which we had over there. We walked past. There's probably, I forget if it was like 1,600 Drapers or so. Mm-hmm. And then there's Duke, which is an early variety that's an older variety. It's still pretty widely grown. It's productive and it's early, and there hasn't been a replacement that's come out for it. It has there's some flaws with it, but it's the best option for early fruit right now, I would say. It's not my favorite flavor wise. It seems to get better actually, like with a little bit of like cold storage, the sugars mature.
You know, interesting.
Yeah, and there's some varieties that are that way.
It flowers late but fruits early, so
that's
it, in
attractive.
Theory, misses any of those cold snaps that we have
in
early spring.
Yeah, and like it's grown, you know, widely out, you know, west and the northwest. I mean, it's because of their more mild winters and long spring and fall. It's incredibly productive out there. You know, per acre, it's like, you know, they're getting like high teens per, you know, or pounds, you know, per acre, which is incredible. So that does not happen in the Northeast.
But yeah, I think it was fun to get to taste them all this year, because you never know what they're going to taste like until they like start fruiting. You're like, oh, is this going to be a good one? Is this going to be a bad one?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
we do have a few that,
yeah,
not that great, but we have them. So we try to shift those to like the frozen, where they get a little sweeter in the freezer. So.
But yeah, that's you know, that's the you know, the blueberries have this longevity, and it's, you know, they take, you know, 5+ years to really come into production, and then they're productive for you know, 30 years or so, 30, 40 years. And so you're always gambling a little bit on like, okay, we're going to have this variety for, you know, quite a while, you know, for my life, you know, like, yeah. So I hope I like it.
Yeah.
Obviously you can rip stuff out, but,
But you don't want to.
No, yes, ideally you don't want to. So, but yeah, this is, you know, this is like gotten us excited about, like, you know, even like future plantings and all of that.
Another,
like,
there's 10 of these fields. Where, you know,
oh, gee.
Yeah, I mean, there's another, like,
there's another 5 acres that we're hoping to acquire
at some point to like merge into the farm. Yeah. It's kind of been
to do another
offered,
5 acre
you know,
planting.
It's kind of come back and forth at some point. So, but you know, with the thought that, especially, you know, you just have like the system set up now for blueberries here, where you could really just efficiently have a large block here.
We were close last year. We started doing field work and
that was 2 years ago.
2 years cover cropping, like, okay, we're gonna get the plants in, and then it was off the table. Yeah, we would lease it for strawberries, but there's no water, there's no irrigation out here, and strawberries really gotta have that set up. So we're just gonna patiently wait.
What's your standardized spacing now?
3 feet between bushes and 10 feet between in row or between rows.
Yeah, and that's becoming the norm other places. I mean, like, even down in New Jersey, people are doing like 2.5 feet. They're 2.5 feet between bushes, which is really tight. Changes your pruning strategies, but they're really hedging them almost. Out in the Northwest, it's like, you know, 3 foot, 10 foot on center, 3 foot between bushes. And it's, you know, they're finding like it doesn't impact kind of, you know, per acre, you know, really like increase fertilizer applications or even like, you know, water wise things like that. So I mean, I think, as you know, I said last week, it was like, you know, the difference between with 4 foot spacing, it's, you know, 1,089 plants per acre versus like, you know, 1,450 something, you know, I forget what it is, 54 or some 59.
Yeah. So you're getting more yield per acre.
And it's, you know, it's your fixed asset of your land. And so you're maximizing kind of the return. And berries are a tricky one in that they're, you know, they're kind of a high investment and high return, but they're also, you know, they're incredibly laborious and like have, you know, there's a lot of harvest time that goes into them and care that goes into them. So everything you can do to maximize that return is...
That's why you see like this baby row planted here, because we're like, oh, we don't need the row to be that wide. Let's stick one more row.
Queen. I'm like, that's another...
one more row
that's
in.
That's another, what are 160 plants or something, you know? You know, 10 pounds a bush, you're like, okay. Yeah. Yeah, you start to, you know, I've been kind of looking at little patches all over the farm on just where can we squeeze this in or that.
Hoop houses.
Yeah, hoop houses and leaf bay.
Oh, yeah, I want to see them.
Three summer raspberries and 2 fall. And then the first 2 are blueberries.
Yeah, we've been foraging some blueberries in high summer as well. We don't keep many of our houses without manipulating the sides to generate soil warmth and heat. And, you know, kind of in a hyper-local market, trying to just be a couple weeks ahead. And it's also what you can balance with the collision of harvest that we're talking about.
These are summer raspberries. I guess they do a light, you know, fall crop, but pretty late. These are Novas all here.
We put them in, I think, really to sort of trial the mechanical harvester on raspberries to see if we could do them for, like, you know, beer or jam market. We trialed the mechanical harvester on them this year for the first time, but it was too wet.
Yeah, it was, I mean, just the
leaves,
it was you know, it was the
such
summer.
A wet
it was
year.
Like we were getting so much, like, you know, chafe and, you know, leaves and matter.
I would think raspberries would be too
like out west, they're like breeding for raspberries for mechanical harvesting, and but more for like the jam and, you know, the that kind of market. And we have, you know, a decent amount
popsicles,
of like
sorbet,
you know, brewery counts. Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, other value-added products. And we're like, oh, that's a really efficient way to get it off. And then I found there's a guy in New Hampshire that, but he ended up getting a fancy harvester through a grant there, and he's been doing he's been harvesting his raspberries that way for like bakeries and things like that. And so I asked him about varieties, kind of reached out to him and Cornell and some other places about, you know, varieties that would work well. And for the guy in New Hampshire, this was the one he said was the best for him right now. And so we tried it out. It's, the jury's out still. We ended up the last 2 years, I guess, opening this up, kind of like splitting in half and like flip-flopping for pick your own. And then we were picking it as well for just like the freezer market. The fruit quality between the high tunnels and field is like
night and day.
And so we've gotten really used to the high tunnel quality. And like, but you know, you're like, you know, we're, you know, being a wholesale market too, like the shelf life is incredible coming out of the high tunnels. And so, and then we have, you know, we have clamshells and your name's on it, and you're like, okay, like, what do you want your like farm name on, you know, on this berry or this one, you know? And like, you know, it becomes really clear.
But so, it's for pick your own, it's not an ideal setup because people don't like really long rows. There's no way to get between the rows, and then it's hard to get people to the bottom of the
hill. We'll change it so people enter this way, and then we'll change the path and have people enter through the bottom, and so it forces them to kind of like, forces them to come up a little bit. No, why
everything's
exactly,
on 200
but we have
feet.
A lot on 200 feet.
Except, except the Spear Street field, that's 230.
Yeah, that is that was the way that it broke. It's different. The south is 260 something, and the north is 3. And this whole, like what we see here, these blueberries here are all on 200 foot blocks, you know, kind of like row length here. I think it started, our strawberries were on that. And so, you know, it just like, was like how you're thinking about things.
Five lanes end up.
Exactly. And then it's like, you're like, you know, how you think about like, okay, we need X amount of row feet of irrigation or plastic, or, you know, it's just like, I know that math.
It's also good, like a distance for crew when they're harvesting, where you can like see the end goal.
Yes.
Whereas our strawberries rows down there, they're like, I don't know how many feet.
Yeah, those
600 feet. Where it's
there's a break in the middle. But,
yeah, but you don't really see that. You're like, oh my gosh, I have
it's
a mental thing.
It's a mental thing.
I mean, when you like anything you read about like establishing, especially like pick your own, is like factoring in row length and you know, for both customers and crew. So.
So are you using a mower right up to the plastic or?
Yeah, yep. so this is all it's a Blue Ray sheep fescue that's here, and it's a low-mow grass, basically a clumping fescue. And so it doesn't
Blue Ray
sheep fescue. And there's other, actually that one we weren't able to get that this year, but it was a different different sheep fescue that we were able to get this year. I can't remember the name of it.
Well, I mean, you have to go with it. Blueberry.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Exactly. So
it pairs nicely, right?
But we basically can, like, you know, we go through we clean up before pick your own and things like that, of course. And
but
you know,
don't really have
but
to.
We don't have
it's
to.
Not yeah, like last year our mower was broken
for the whole year.
And we were like,
so we did one spring row mow, and then we didn't mow again until I think the fall.
Oh, it was like, it was ridiculous.
And it was, I mean, it wasn't that bad.
I think I went through it with like the flail mower or the brush hogger.
Yeah. But if we had normal grass.
Yeah. Mowing weekly.
Yeah, no, and exactly. And that was when we moved. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, when we moved, I felt like I was at the Intervale. We didn't have this, and I felt like I was just mowing all the time, and you know, just in some of it you're trying to, like, you know, it is like weed control and airflow and all these things, and then it's like customer experience. And we kind of shifted that way, and then last year we ended up finding, you know, we've always had like side discharge mowers, and we got a rear discharge mower, which is also nice as far as like not blowing stuff onto plants and fruit and all of that. And yeah, so yeah, we're figuring it out. But it's, you know, it's like cuts back on mowing time and all of that, which is significant, and fuel usage, and, you know, obviously impact. Mowing has its place. Like, sometimes it's a great way to get this overview of your field and your farm, and like where you're kind of just zoning it, like, you know, like the plants. And so you're like, kind of from there, you're like, oh, this plant's like, you know, it's nutrient wise needs a little help, or it's like you notice diseases, or, you know, whatever it might be, or just even like where you are in the you know, the fruiting period and how far away from harvest you are. So yeah, it has its place, but, you know, you don't want to do it every day.
Yeah, right.
So this is, we haven't pruned yet in here, so it's a pretty, you know, feels pretty jungly right now. This is a variety all of Duke in here, all on 3-foot spacing, and super productive coming out of here. You know, it's just single wall poly with roll-up sides. We leave it open most of the winter, and then usually middle of March end up dropping sides and start manipulating, you know, kind of temperature in here a little bit and try to build up some heat in here. And so with that, you know, we get fruit often around like the 15th of June, you know, 15th or so of June. And so it allows you for a period to have blueberries, strawberries, and then, you know, and raspberries really the end of June, where we have early season raspberries that are coming out of the tunnels as well. So it's this great, like, you know, the trifecta of berries that, you know, for like people love it at farmers market, but then even at, you know, in our wholesale market and things like that, it's, you know, it's just like this add-on, like you're coming there already with, you know, strawberries, and it's like, wait, blueberries as well, we have raspberries. And so it just, you know, builds your, you know, kind of your sales and market presence. We initially put in, I guess there are two houses here.
We put in another variety, Chanticleer, in that house, and it just didn't do well in the tunnels. Just super tall, not much.
Flowered heavily, and then barely fruited. And, it, you know, I talked to the nursery, and they're like, oh, yeah, we're dropping that one. We found the same thing. So, you know, but it was, we put it in because it was 4 or 5 days before the Dukes. So we were like, oh, that, you know, obviously, like, early's good in a local market. And the flavor is nice on it, but it just wasn't productive enough. So we sold those off this year, and they're great for home garden and things like that. But like the space inside the tunnels is so valuable, and, you know, you're trying to maximize your yields in the tunnels. And so we just wanted to shift to something that would actually
pay for itself.
This is the house that we ripped stuff out. We actually threw some. We dug up some old strawberries very late last year and put them in here.
See what happens.
Not sure what's going to happen, but they're in there. I'll tell you in May. And then we get into kind of a raspberry section here. These are all Nova. Actually, this house hasn't been pruned yet. We'll come through. Actually, it's probably starting tomorrow. Is the plan, but come through and we top everything first, just like you can see a little bit better what you're working with. But we top it to try to get more laterals on the canes, and then also so there's like a picking, like a harvest box here, so that people aren't, you know, having to bend and twist. It's like they can just walk down and this is where the fruit is right here.
That's
and
the benefit of raspberries, if you're not bent over the
fruit. Yeah, this is where people start to love, you know, the blueberries and raspberries, the upright fruit.
Yeah, right.
And then all the trellising we have in here is vineyard trellising, which has worked well.
Yeah, and that means like a, you know, like a monofilament wire that doesn't rub at all and seems to last forever.
Interesting.
We used to just use twine and just not strong enough.
Greenhouses, the other, it's like we didn't have enough where we have some of it right now, and it doesn't last. I mean, this stuff lasts 20 years or so. these have been in since 2013. You know, people say productive life is 10 to 15 years. I feel like they're getting...
We're trying to figure out their transition plan,
but how not to lose.
But a decade, the easy.
They're starting to get tired a little bit, and there's still a lot of fruit that comes off. You know, it's still like a wall of fruit. It's amazing to see.
Yeah.
But we're starting to see that, and then, you know, even things that you put in a decade ago, you know, certain varieties are like, I don't know if I would plant that again. And you know, there's either new varieties or just where your market is. And we're starting to think about that.
Right.
Trying to figure out how to
phase
plants. So it's like, it's like one house at a time, and we'd like to, you know, cover crop it and do like some serious mustards and things like that in here to try to just break up disease cycles. And, you know, you're trying to figure out that, or if you, I don't really want to go like the, like we thought, like oak for a year, could you grow like in pots and then put them in? But it's just like, it's so much labor to do all that. And, you know, and, you know, then they become so root bound also. And in the pots that it's, you know, the people are growing in pots are just keeping them in pots. And that's not, we're soil based.
Right.
That's really our focus. So, you know, our thought is maybe we'd put up another tunnel and start rotating through, and then, you know, kind of replanting, phasing some out, and kind of go that route. That's where it's tricky with perennials and tunnels, and unless you plant something completely different in here, you know, but disease wise, you'd want to break the cycle if you could. These are all Arnois, Oval Tex, 200 foot long, 30 foot wide. We like them. I mean, they're, you don't have to think about them.
Yeah.
They're like bomber as far as like winter goes. This is the first, last 2 years, they changed, and I've told Arnois this, but like we have the plastic, and then we use this webbing on the outside just for, it's because of the amount of winds that we have here. It's pretty intense at times. And the webbing just like lashes, you know, bow to bow.
Really bind it down, kind of like they do with cat tunnels.
It's kind of
this tension on it.
It keeps tension. It's been great. They changed something, either the manufacturer of the webbing or the UV stabilization or something on the webbing, where it's not the newer stuff is not lasting. And so we used to have a bunch of Haygrove tunnels, and we're now starting to use, like, you see the orange cord there, the whole Haygrove. Cord that's, you know, still UV stabilized, but it just seems to last. And so, and you know, we the one tunnel down there that we lost in whenever that last windstorm was, you know, the cord from Arnois had all deteriorated after 3 years or whatever, you know, two years, I think it started to come off. Whereas, you know, we had stuff that lasted like, you know, 8+ years before that. So, so we're trying to just make sure that they're stabilized. What else down here? Well, there's more raspberries. So I guess these are summer, Killarney, and then Prelude, and then Amara, and then another house of Prelude for raspberries for us.
And Prelude gives us a double crop. So we get a summer crop, and then we get a fall crop off of them as well.
Yeah, we double crop those. And Nova, out of this house, you get, you know, yeah, you get a double too. It's not as great. The Preludes will come on again in late August, September, and go until frost. These, it's like late September, beginning October. So it's a shorter, you know, double crop. And so it's not,
a family harvest.
Yeah. I mean, we pick them, you know, we'll pick them if kids will eat them up until Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Our daughter will eat them. Our son maybe will eat five or six.
She's got a problem. Thank God she lives on a berry farm.
Yeah.
And then there's a gap here where we had a triple bay Haygrove. We used to have actually Haygroves up here, and then we had a triple bay there. We lost it in a snowstorm a couple years ago. And they had a love-hate relationship with the house, honestly. It was a lot of square footage for really cheap, which is great. But they're flimsy. They obviously can't handle any snow load. It was, you know, we had just put on new plastic on it, and so we lost the whole thing. So it was kind of a bummer that way. We had all of our fall raspberries in there for years, and then we were using, you know, perimeter insect netting for spotted wing on it, and so we were able to really like lock it down well, and so it was a great house in that sense. And it was, you know, they're cheap, you know, it's a lot of square footage for cheap, and it's basically we weren't trying to manipulate really temperatures with those houses. They're not as tight. It was really like a rain shield more than anything, and that would stretch us another month into the fall. So we've put in some, I guess down low, kind of closer to those other houses, we put in, I guess last spring, we put in some new fall raspberries there, and we had phased out some other ones. I think there's one more variety that will probably, it's starting to get kind of tired, that we'll probably phase it out. But we're kind of leaving the space, not exactly sure. I mean, just grew a little bit of flowers there, some, you know, some squash and some other things last year, and kind of, you know, it's, but we might need it for, there's one smaller field of our strawberries, so we might need some of it for strawberry rotation just to make sure we have, you know, adequate.
We have a little bit of a land crunch, so we're trying
we're at that. When we moved here, we thought we'd have, you know, plenty of land, and now we're like, shit, we're so tight on, we don't have, like, our rotation's getting really tight for strawberries, and we're trying to really be deliberate about it, and that's, you know, we've shifted more to, for Junes, more to plugs, just because it allows us to cover crop more of, you know, kind of the fields a little bit longer, so we're planting them in end of, you know, August, so we could still get, like, you know, it's like almost like another year of cover cropping on a field. And so, you know, but we're on like a
three-year rotation,
and it's, I'd like it to be a four-year, really. So, but we don't have the land.
Unless we... You've tied it up.
And that's like the perennials, you know. You know, the work is done. So not that there's not work related to it, so.
I ordered 5,000 more blueberries. I'm like, what do you mean? We don't have anywhere to put them.
I want to. I didn't do it. This was all also 2020 fall planting. There's Nelson and Calypso and Last Call for a late variety. Nelson we have a bunch of already. The Calypso and Last Call, we had our first, you know, kind of harvest off of them last year, and excited by flavor and, you know, a lot of other things. As far as the just modern attributes of, you know, kind of the breeding that's happening. We've tied a lot of land. We're kind of probably going to phase out. These are like Elliot's here, which are, these are plants that were just planted right before Hurricane Irene. They were floating in pots. Like, some of them were in pots, and they just like never recovered. Here. So we're testing out. Elliot's a later season variety, and a lot of people grow it because it is so late. You know, it fruits well into September, but it's a little more acidic flavor-wise. You know, it
doesn't always ripen well for us.
Yeah,
compared to the newer late season varieties.
And it's just the flavor is so much better on the newer ones. I mean, they've really, you want to eat it.
These are the ones that customers would complain about. Yeah. They're tart.
These are tart. Yeah.
You have a really nice property, how it's, like you said, enough of a hill where it's draining, but it's not, it doesn't feel like you're hiking up the hill.
Yeah, it's sloped, you know, it just has a slope, you know, and it's like enough airflow, water flow, you know, so it's great that way. This is kind of what we have is like summer, this becomes more like event space where we have, there's like kids music and yoga, and there's, you know, different workshops, and we do some dinners and, you know, a little bit of everything in here. And then winter, it gets packed with everything possible. And it's actually not as bad this year. I have a lot of stuff outside still, I'll be honest. But there's a lot in here.
This is a Cadillac of a multiplayer.
This is one of their demos that we got. you know, it was the end of season, and it was like, you know, it's cheaper than it was. We were due for a new mulch layer. Ours was had been welded, you know, kept on breaking, you know, just was like.
But this has the road track, which for us being on a hill is really helpful. You know, the old one, you know, I would sit on the back and I'd like push one side down with like a garden stake, being on the hill. So it's
Neat. I mean, these like they, you know, Rainflow does these like end of season sales on everything where it was like half off, and I was like, okay. And we were like looking, and so a neighbor bought our old one, and you know, it was we did not look back. You can, it's really nice, you can adjust the crown really easily. You can just crank here, so you can get like a crown if you want. You can, you know, simply go, you know, 4-inch bed height, 8-inch bed height, you know, just minor adjustments, you know, obviously like the road track side of things. But yeah, forms a really nice bed. It really does. It's been great, you know, with strawberries, really, more than anything. Just like the, you know, the amount of plastic that we lay. You know, I guess veggie farms lay a lot of plastic too.
Yeah.
But it's one of those, the difference of having a well-laid bed is huge as far as like the production and, you know, the ease and the headache of the job also. You know, it's like it can
a
be
lot less shoveling with this.
A lot less like covering edges, things like that. You know, it's just really, there's so many little micro adjustments on this that you can really get it dialed in, which is nice. So our crew thanks us for this one. And that's, you know, all these like so many investments are always like crew happiness, like speed, doing the job better, but also like what's going to make everyone happier and, you know, make the job go quicker as well. What else do we have in here? We have, you know, this is a plastic, you know, a wrapper, cone spreader. This is a Jackdo sprayer. And we use this, we use it somewhat for strawberries. It's a boom, so you can get out pretty far, but I'd like to get a, I'm looking for a better strawberry sprayer right now. Kind of might, there's some down in Pennsylvania right now that are some used ones down there that I might make a trip down for. A transplanter. This is my dad's old tractor here in the corner, so.
It does work.
It works every couple of years when we get it going, and then it sits there and oozes the other times. newer used mower. rear discharge, which is nice. And we do, we've used kind of like, you know, we had like traditional like tractor, you know, riding mowers or whatever. And then we went with zero turn for a little bit. But the problem with the zero turn is that they're so wide often that the actual mower was hitting the bushes and knocking fruit off all the time. And so we've kind of shifted to these front mounted mowers, and you know, the decks, these are, you know, 6-foot decks basically.
And
so the tractor's narrow. You can really edge right underneath the plant there, and the way we prune, there's not, you're not really knocking off fruit, you know, maybe a little bit here and there, but like it's minimal basically. So it allows you to really get right along like on the edge of our landscape fabric, and just kind of have a clean line there. So that's that. This is these are the Harvey 200 EC Pick, I think was their old name. This is what Rob Meadows has from the Netherlands. We found a guy down in Georgia that had a bunch of them and was selling them off. And his, he had a, you know, he has a giant, actually organic, you know, it's 300 acres of organic blueberries down there. He got them. His H2A crew wouldn't use them because they
get paid piecemeal,
and they couldn't really figure out how to, you know, it's basically four people on this operating it, and so they couldn't figure out how to divvy, and it was creating tension, and it was like, you know, like basically, he was like, they won't use them, so they're sitting here.
Wow.
And so,
think even if they. Took it all and divided it by the four of them.
Totally.
Or whatever.
I mean, it's like, it's still ahead. So this is basically the same, you know, it's like you can pull, I don't know how I have it set up right now, but you can.
These pushers.
You know, you can pull these, push these so they, these brushes basically go around the bush like that. And then you're on the side here, you know, kind of shaking, you know, getting everything into there.
I think we used it once this year.
Our
crew was trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were doing when they were trying to reconfigure.
Our crew had an interesting reaction to it too. So I'm curious. Yeah. And some of it was like challenge of like our trays don't fit exactly in here. So like these raspberry trays actually do. And so, but then also the pruning, you recognize with all these things, it's, you know, you need to, it's one thing to like find the equipment and be like, we're going to use this, but you also have to start to integrate all of your other practices into, as far as your planting into it. And so, and we've started to do that more and more with the mechanical harvester. So it's, you know, it's that narrower crown so you can really get in and out. So, but yeah, jury's still out on this. Rob told me it took him about 3 years to figure it out, and then like now he really likes it, but he was questioning it too, and we didn't give ourselves the time, honestly.
It was a crazy year.
Yeah, and it was that year of like you have your plan A, plan B, you know, plan C always, but it seemed like just every day it was like, which plan is it today, you know, because of the rain and just, you know, constant pivoting that way, so... And then, you know, this is like for pick your own toys. If kids are happy, we've seen, you know, the sandbox, like toys out. Yeah. If kids are happy, parents are happy type of thing.
Some people come just to play in the sandbox and get a popsicle.
Yeah, popsicle in a
sandbox. They don't pick berries, so just to play.
But we try to set it up so there's like, you know, seating around for people and, you know, umbrella, you know, shade. You know, if you have shade and toys... Drinks for the parents, something like that, you know, it's like, oh, I gotta get the espresso machine or something like that, you know, really make people happy. So this is our barn, you know, kitchen, value-added kitchen.
Yeah.
In here, we have, you know, popsicle machine, sorbet machine, you know, stove, mainly value added production. We do packing in here. It's kind of the only insulated space right now in our barn. And so for frozen berries, it's here. It's like we're getting to the point of frozen berries where we need to like find like there's hoppers where, you know, you can fill bags really quickly. We do it all with scoops and everything. This is all like a glycol bath right here for the popsicle molds. So if it's like seven molds across here.
And then it freezes them in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, it goes down to negative 20 Celsius.
It's like 150 popsicles every 30 minutes. And then
it's more than that. Yeah, it's in an hour, it's 365 pops an hour or something like that. So, and then we do sorbet out of here. And then it's just like, you know, all the kitchen gear and three bay and
jam.
All of that. We do a strawberry for farmers market. We have, you know, all the pops and sorbet and the berries, of course. And then we do a strawberry lemonade as well. So that we do in like little, you know, little mason jars. This is kind of our production space, I guess, for all of that.
Yeah.
We haven't done jam for a while. The goal is to make jam this year.
And maybe get some popsicles going in the winter.
Yeah.
Taking them out of the molds and stuff.
Yeah, trying to get
trying
back.
To get ahead.
Trying to just get some stuff done this winter before things get totally
going
crazy.
I know.
Yeah.
And then the winter's
it's really fast. Yeah. And then it's like, you know, and then you're like, oh God, we have a ton of pruning to do. I need to really, that's where I should be. And you know, it's like, it's bare right now. I should be out pruning versus like,
right?
I can do this when it's snowing or rainy or, you know, or it's like raw out, you know, I can hide in the kitchen and do that work. So, that's pretty much it.
It's nice. It's not ideal space for making popsicles and sorbet because it gets super... Because it's on the south side of the barn. Intentionally,
with
windows. With nice windows.
Yeah, I'd like to turn into, office some days.
Yeah.
Move the kitchen to the basement. So, you know, we set up our farm stand. We have it in early season and late season that it's set up as self-serve, where there's a square and cash box. And then during the pick-your-own season, you know, from, you know, late June through August, it's staffed fully. But so, you know, it's kind of goes back and forth where it's like, pick your own, you need, you know, people need assistance. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have the, you know, we have like, this is like popsicle and sorbet freezer, and then there's another freezer of like, you know, kind of food and people that we, food that we like to eat and people we know that we're trying to support their products from like, you know, different meats to, you know, fish to, you know, and then, you know, we have, you know, kind of fresh berry, this like fresh berry cooler, and then, you know, we bring in some greens from like Footprint and, you know, there's like some things like that, you know, tomatoes from different people. We grow some, but we, not much.
So that's all like, all the veg gets laid out, and then dry goods.
Yeah, a lot of, you
get
know,
laid out.
Things that will not expire around here, you know, that it's kind of fill. But it's, you know, it's good for like a neighborhood market, and then we have like a lot of like, pick your own, I don't want to say like impulse buys, but like there's like things to like snack on while you're here, pick your own, from drinks to, you know, whatever, little, you know, things to keep everyone happy.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's kind of how we have handled that. So, and now it's, you know, now it's just jammed with picnic tables and hand wash sinks and things like that. Whatever, old signs. So
we keep it open, I think, like end of May to, I think,
November. We went into, you know, I don't know, 10th of November. It was like until we stop harvesting strawberries. So let's see. So this part of the barn has our, it obviously has equipment in it right now. Freezers, fridges, you know, walk-ins down here. This is in the summer, gets set up where we're, you know, kind of more like packing and storing, and packing materials are all down here. This is a freezer, cold plate cart for transporting popsicles and sorbet to farmers market here. So this we plug in the night before, and then it, in theory, keeps things cold through farmers market. We still load up a bunch of ice packs in there because I get nervous about making it through farmers market and losing,
that's critical.
Losing product, basically. So, and then, yeah, there's another tractor, another sprayer in here. And then this part of the barn, we put this temporary wall here in the winter to kind of create another, because our water goes through here, and also to create a semi-warm area that's not heated, but it stays fairly warm. Mm-hmm. So we put this temporary wall up for winter. It's packed, but this is where our packing equipment is back here. So this area, I mean, it's cleared out in the
summer.
Summertime. You know, it's, again, jammed with stuff right now. But we have here, this is a BEI, which is a company that was out of Michigan forever and was kind of the initial leader in all like the blueberry packing equipment. And they went out of business a little while ago. Somehow they imploded. I forget. There was what exactly happened. But so this is basically a conveyor that moves its way up and then goes under here where there's, you know, a fan that's blowing up, and so the berries kind of popcorn from there, and it helps to remove kind of stems, leaves, all of that, and that gets shot out into the, you know, the left, into that little kind of hopper that direction. And then from there we have it set up where they are dropped onto this, which is hidden under all this junk, but this is a like a sorting table, basically, also another conveyor. So it's set up that the fruit drops onto here and then rolls off this way, and then there's a channel here where we drop kind of the soft fruit, and then, you know, we have like trays down here that collect all the soft fruit. So people are, you know, we have just like maybe two people on each side, and they're just looking, you know, you're just like staring at blue and kind of just in like total zone, and like, oh, you know, bruised, you know, soft, and pulling out anything funky from there. And then from there it goes, I guess we have some other things that we haven't really been using, like when we got all the equipment, there's a sizer here, if you want to be like, where do you have only big fruit, or if you're trying to, like, some people separate smaller fruit out for frozen and only sell larger fruit for fresh. We kind of, you know, like, same goes with, like, strawberries. We've tried to, like, buck the trend that, like, all fruit has to be, like, big and, like, like some of the small fruit is, to me, is like the most flavorful, really. But so we don't use the sizer really much. But now, I mean, now they make like optical sorters and like, you know, it's like, you know, I'm like, oh my God, you know, it's like it takes soft fruit sorters, you know, green berries, you name it. Like, it's like, you know, there's pretty incredible sorters, but they're also like a small investment, very large investment. And then here tucked away is our clamshell filler. And this works, it has what's called a denester up here, where, are there any clamshells left on there?
No, the stacks of clamshells get put up there. They come down this line. All the fruit gets dumped in here. Yeah. It fills them.
So, yeah. Way,
and then it sends them down, shuts the clamshell.
Yeah, this basically, the clamshells get opened up, funnel through, filled, closed, and then, get shot out here onto a table where we just pack them directly into shipping boxes and either into the fridge or right into the van. And this whole investment has been a game changer with our scale and also with using the mechanical harvester. But this alone, like, this is probably my new favorite piece of equipment on the farm, really.
And it saves us a lot of time.
It's so much time. It saves, you know, it's 90
pints per minute.
You know, so it's just
like one person to do that.
You just like hear it going. And you're like, look at that. It's amazing that way.
Yeah, it goes fast.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. People are just dumping, you know, trays into here. And
I think the crew likes to see how fast they can get it going because everyone's like running and like.
It's like music going and like it's fun. I mean, it's great that way. So, but yeah, this is a guy, McKibben. He's out of Michigan. He, you know, has a machine shop there that does a lot of stuff for blueberries, but McKibben Harvester. Or he does McKibben Harvesters. He did these. And this one's obviously older and been around, but it's what we could afford at the time, and it works for us. And I think at some point maybe we'll scale up in a different way. But this buys us a lot of, you know, a lot of time. And it's
a throughput multiplier for sure.
So. Yeah.
The only trouble we had this year is the berries, some of the newer varieties were too big for the hopper. So it would like backlog the hopper.
I know we had someone's job was tapping the side of the hopper and it was,
that's an interesting problem to have.
So. And then, you know, yeah, so that's really allowed us to, handle volumes of fruit that we weren't able to handle before, and we get backlogged and our fridge would be filled, or we couldn't get fruit out quick enough, or, you know, even just the packing time just was taking, I wanted people in the field and, you know, it would take like a whole afternoon to pack a harvest. And we can pack, you know, we can pack 1,000 pints in, you know, in, it's like 20 minutes or something like that, you know, so it's really, it's freed up time, and also the quality, because we're going through and instead of like people, you know, either harvesting directly into pints or just harvesting into buckets and kind of like quickly filling pints, we're looking at the fruit another time. So it's getting the stems out, it's getting the leaves out, we're picking out the soft fruit, and so and then packing it. So at the end of the day, it's just a higher quality product. And we've always been very product quality focused, and that's, you know, it's something that's kind of distinguished us in the marketplace, and we've stuck with that. And this has kind of helped, I guess, simplify and expedite it, and just helped us maintain that quality. So, let's see. I guess if you want to like peek at this while we're outside, and then So this harvester is a pull behind blueberry harvester. Corvan, it's called Corvan 930, and Oxbow bought Corvan kind of for the technology a little while ago. So it's now, you know, Oxbow makes an Oxbow 930, pretty much exact same harvester, just looks nicer. Different paint, yellow versus blue paint. Basically, it's tow behind here, and then you can offset it so it straddles the rows. And then there's all these dowels here that you can adjust as well. you know, based off of kind of the bush and brush height and all of that.
The whole unit moves.
Yeah, the whole unit. You can adjust up and down and left and right, and you can really get it dialed in. So, which is nice because we do have this slope on our field, so we can kind of get it so that it's set to our it. Yeah, exactly. Everything gets leveled on it exactly. Mm-hmm. And then how it works is it goes from there, straddling the row, knocks the fruit off. It goes onto these conveyors here. And then these conveyors go back to the rear of the harvester, go through another kind of blower there where it knocks a lot of like the leaves off and kind of just like the debris matter that might come off with the harvest dowels. And then in the back from there,
the crew stand. It only is three people.
Yeah, so it's driver and two people on each side. So we have harvest trays that are back here, and they kind of just collect, they basically collect the berries that are coming off of here, and then, you know, they get just,
just,
you know, as they're filled, they just get stacked here, and, you know, sometimes end of the row, we'll take off a bunch of full trays and pile them up and then collect them with a truck and bring them back or collect them at the end. And then, you know, this is where all kind of the
leaves and the stems get blown.
Everything comes out there. What else about this as far as, like, you know, these are the catch plates here. Everything's kind of frozen up a little bit.
Yeah.
That's what goes.
They're designed that, you know, they kind of work around the bush and then close back up. So it opens, closes there to really minimize the fruit loss. And then you can adjust the angle as well on them. But, you know, when we were talking about how we're pruning to kind of have a narrow crown and also minimize the lower branches and things like that, a lot of it is thinking about both this harvester and the EC harvester and crew happiness. I'm just like, nobody really wants to be like down here harvesting, you know, you're harvesting all day, it's tough work, and so you want to have it up, you know, the fruit upright in general. This is a lot of our kind of pruning techniques are thinking about both of those pieces of machinery right now. It's been a mental game changer.
Has saved a lot of labor in the, you know, after we've done like the harvest for the freezer, we go through and we try to get every berry off the bush, sort of like it's a way to manage pest and disease. You know, any fruit that's left on there is a vector for disease. So, you know, we can take this down. It's 10 minutes. To take this down a row versus like 60 man hours of like tedious work that nobody wants to do.
Yeah, cleanup harvests are miserable. You know? And like, you know, like a big conventional farm would just go out and, you know, spray, you know, kind of a fungicide. But, we don't want to be doing that. And it allows us to, again, maximize kind of the returns where it's a cleanup, mm-hmm. we freeze it, and, you know, it's either value-added products or, you know, or frozen berries.
Yeah.
And also time saver as far as crew, you know, we factored it in for a long time and managed it some years better than others, I would say, but it, you know, you're going to get the crop off with this.
And we got this the year of COVID, so it really helped us, you know, we didn't pick your own open. So it allowed us to, you know, get all of our fruit off the bushes with the same number of crew.
Were you planning to invest in that?
No, it was sort of, well, I think we were in Florida and we're like, okay, we're going to make these big investments. Like Eric Rosendale always went for these like big investments and like, we're like, we're going to go for it. And then, like, you know, this is before COVID. It's like the year.
This is the year to take like, take a leap of faith, basically.
Like, and, like, okay, financially,
you know,
maybe
we'll
borrow some
money, we'll like get the farm to the next scale, all these things. And then, you know, COVID hit, and I was like, it was, I mean, it was a blessing.
It all worked out.
I mean, it worked out, but it was like, we were counting on the investments with also our normal income stream and all of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, eliminating pick your own, and we didn't, we had a newborn in the house, so like, we didn't have the farms. Did we have the farm stand?
We opened the farm stand that year.
Okay.
Selfishly, it's like, oh, we want like food security. Like, I don't want to be going anywhere for food.
But it was, yeah. So anyway, but we ended up, this came from down in New Jersey, and you know, it was, it's been around the block. But fully functional for our scale and, you know,
right,
for what we do.
Right, the mileage you're putting on is it's a lot less than it's where not, it came from.
It's not, you know, 100 acres of blueberries, you know, per farm type of thing and running from farm to farm. So.
And then there was a super dry year where we used it, all the fruit was starting to drop. Yeah. So we were able to, you know, the whole, like, 13 acres, like, all the fruit needed to be harvested at once. So we were able to lean on this. We didn't have those fresh sales, but we didn't lose that fruit.
Yeah.
And last year we used it, same thing, the fruit was getting soft in some of the varieties, so we were able to
because of the amount of moisture last year, and then decrease pick your own traffic because of the amount of rain and things like that. I mean, we were so grateful last year that we weren't just a pick your own farm, you know, because it rained pretty much straight through blueberry season. We managed to still harvest our crop as a result.
It's opened up a lot of, like, wow, this is what we can do. Like, oh, we could plant, you know, we can expand our plantings knowing that we have, you know, this.
I remember the first time using it, I was like, oh, I see the light. Like, this is like, you know, you really are like,
turn
this
page.
And there, you know, there are varieties now that are being bred just for this type of harvester where it's, you know, for the freezer market, but then you can play with, like, the RPMs on it, and so people are still doing, like, fresh harvests with them, and they don't last as long in, like, the marketplace, but they're doing fresh harvests, and so it really changed how I was starting
thinking about the
long term as far as the farm and labor and, you know, all these things, where it it took a huge weight off of you know, me, like, as far as, like, coordinating a crew. And I've always said, like, if I can figure out how to harvest this, you know, I know I can find a home for it, is what I say. Like, I can find either the fresh market or frozen market or whatever it might be, you know, I can sell the product, but the bottleneck has always been, like, every farm wants more people out there, but what you can afford and all of that, you know, as far as labor and this. It really cuts our harvest costs down, like, you know, drastically. So, and then there's other just random pieces of equipment that I around. Broken frame trucks, mulch hunters, discs, cultivators, chisels, whatever, you know. We're not big, like, we don't till much. We rely on, like, we have subsoiler, chisel, and then try to, use more like the field cultivator, you know, just as far as, like, soil health. We had an older tiller that didn't work for very well, or was just at the end of its life, and recently got a newer one where it is, you know, it has its place as far as, like, laying beds and things like that. You're like, oh, that's nice and fluffy and really flips well. And so we lean on it at times. But, I mean, the lucky thing is, you know, for our farm, there's very little soil disturbance because of the perennial. So we have kind of the initial disturbance of planting and establishment, but then it really has enabled our soil to heal and kind of, to have that kind of I think it's allowed us to really work on, like, the soil health more so, I think, than, you know, that continual tillage and continually opening up soils. Yeah. Winter's a nice quiet time, though. On the, you know, it's like we go from having a lot of people around, and both public and even crew, you know, on the farm, and it's great, and there's a lot of energy around it, but it's also really nice just to settle into winter and
rest, recharge.
Yeah, I can go out and walk the dogs, and I'm not going to run into people. I can be in my own head. And
And that was The Farmer's Share. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Adam and Jess of Adam's Berry Farm. They're on Facebook and Instagram, as well as their website, adamsberryfarm.com. The Farmer's Share is supported by a grant offered by the USDA Specialty Crop Block Program from the Vermont Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Markets. This funding helps to cover some of my time and travel in order to produce these podcasts for the next 2.5 years. The USDA Agricultural Marketing Service supports projects that address the needs of U.S. specialty crop growers and strengthens local and regional food systems. I have no doubt that this podcast will meet those needs and help educate growers to support the industry. This show also is supported by the Ag Engineering Program of the University of Vermont Extension. If you enjoy this show and want to help support its programming, you can make a one-time or reoccurring donation on our website by visiting thefarmershare.com/support. We also receive funding from the Vermont Vegetable and Berry Growers Association. The VVBGA is a nonprofit organization funded in 1976 to promote the economic, environmental, and social sustainability of vegetable and berry farming in Vermont. Their membership includes over 400 farms across Vermont and beyond, as well as about 50 businesses and organizations that provide products and services of all types to their members. Benefits to members include access to the VVBGA listserv to buy, sell plants and equipment, share farming information, and tap the vast experience of our growers. Access the Community Accreditation for Produce Safety, also known as CAPS. This program is designed for growers, by growers, to help you easily meet market and regulatory food safety expectations. You can access the VVBGA's Soil Health Platform, where you can organize all the soil tests and create and store your soil amendment plans and records. Access to webinars for growers in the VVBGA annual meeting. An email subscription to the Vermont Vegetable and Berry newsletter. Camaraderie, enhanced communication, and fellowship among commercial growers. Memberships are on a per farm, per calendar year basis, and annual dues this year are $80. These funds pay for the organization's operating costs and support educational programs and research projects. These funds also support projects that address grower needs around ag engineering, high tunnel production, pest management, pollinators, produce safety, and soil health. Become a member today to be a part of and further support the veg and berry industry. You can visit thefarmershare.com to listen to previous interviews or see photos, videos, or links discussed from the conversation. If you don't want to miss the next episode, enter your email address on our website and you'll get a note in your inbox when the next one comes out. The Farmers Share has a YouTube channel with videos from several of the farm visits. We're also on Instagram, and that's where you can be reminded about the latest episode or see photos from the visit. Lastly, if you're enjoying the show, I'd love it if you could write a review. In Apple Podcasts, just click on the show, scroll down to the bottom, and there you can leave 5 stars and a comment to help encourage new listeners to tune in. I'd also encourage you to share this episode with other grower friends or crew who you think would be inspiring for them. Thanks for listening.